I am fantasy author Elle Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hi friends, it is Friday, February 22nd, as I'm recording this, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Leslie, Elle Penelope. And this week, we're going to talk about revision, not going down rabbit holes, and research, and this week's best thing, which is where I'm going to start because it's top of mind. So we went to see Alita Battle Angel over the past week, and I really loved it. I hadn't been super excited about going to see this movie. The trailers looked they looked okay. They looked fine. You know, I thought it would be fine. But I left it really liking it, except for one thing. So let me start with the good. I write a lot of women like heroes and kick-ass heroines, which I totally am drawn to. And I think that Alita Battle Angel prototype kick-ass heroine really like overpowered almost. I think when we came back, my husband was like, do you think she was overpowered? And he has a real problem with like overpowered, kind of superhero characters, like Superman is boring to him. And I understand that, you know, you need a strong weakness. And I think the problem that I had with the movie was in the weakness that they chose for her, because, you know, she is this cyborg. So she has a human brain, completely non-human body, I guess, metal. Like her face is, they didn't go into it, but you can look at her face because there are actual humans. Everybody else mostly in the movie is human. There are other cyborgs. And so I guess the idea is the face is manufactured in some way. But so the only really human thing in her is her brain, which, you know, it's interesting questions like what makes a human? What makes you a person? Can you just put a brain in anything? And or is it, do you need a brain? Can it just be a consciousness if you're able to extract a consciousness and put it into, you know, a mug? Would that be a human being? And getting into, I think, Black Mirror territory here. But it's an interesting, you know, thought experiment and an interesting premise for science fiction. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of other examples of that. And I don't know this original source material for this. But so yes, she's a cyborg. And so her body, they explained it some kind of way. Oh, she had like a some kind of reactor for her heart. So it was the heart that she had, the manufactured heart, could power the entire city. And then at a certain point in the movie, she gets a new body, which is made for her, and it's special material. And she's just super, super strong. But she is also super empathetic. And I think that is a strength and a weakness because, no spoilers, but, you know, there's a love story there. And that is the thing that I'm trying to get to that did not work for me. I love love stories and things. I write love stories and everything. I'm not interested really in things that don't have love stories. But when they're bad, it's kind of the worst thing. And the love interest was an interesting character. There was a point at which I was really confused about his motivation and where he was coming from, because they didn't do a good job in the movie at a certain point when he realizes, you know, that the villain is bad as a villain. And yet his behavior doesn't change. And so there was either a fault in the acting or the filmmaking or both, where I was confused. And then the other part of this is that love story just didn't work. It started fine. It started good. And they're, you know, they have the meet cute and you see them getting, you know, coming together and forming a bond. But a lot of times in film, that bond is shortcutted. And so you don't get to see that point from I like you to I'm in love with you and I'm going to sacrifice everything for you. And there was a big leap there in this movie. And so that is my mini review of Alita. I think I still loved it. The world building was exquisite. It was so much detail. And you can tell when somebody puts a lot of effort and thought into the world, into the way the city is and the technology and the idea this is in the future after an apocalyptic event, but so there is still technology, but it's not where it was. And everything, you know, character design and costumes and just, it was great. All that stuff was great. And overall, the bigger story I enjoyed too. So yes, that was this week's best thing. I liked that a lot. So my personal update, I am still revising Cry of Metal and Bone, book 3 of my fantasy series, Earthsinger. And I, so you know, once I get my deadline from my publisher, I create a schedule and I try to work backward. And I'm always trying to have enough time to get some external feedback, because I know that as wonderful as I think my writing is, I'm too close to it at all points in time. So there needs to be somebody out external. And I have, you know, several go-to people that I want to be able to read it. The question is time. This book is due May 1st or May 15th. I think it's May 1st. I keep saying I need to look that up. But May 1st sounds right to me. And so that's, you know, a little over 2 months to get it done. And in that time, hopefully have someone read it quickly, although it's going to be a long book. And so the longer the book is, the longer people need to read it. And then I need time to revise it, read it again, read it several times. So yes, I do a schedule when I get my deadline and I work backwards. And so I was scheduled to start fast drafting the new storyline that I have to write for this book yesterday. That did not happen not because of rabbit holes, but because the process, you know, I love schedules. I'm very organized. I'm messy, but I'm organized. And my process does not always adhere to my schedule. That's the part of the war of art. And so, I was like, well, I should be able to do this in 2 weeks. I should be able to create the plot of the new storyline and weave it into the existing stuff that's there in 2 weeks. I've done it before in about 2 weeks, sometimes three, but this time, yes. And I was all set on Tuesday. I was like, yeah, this is going to happen. I'm going to start drafting on Thursday. And then I think I talked to my brother, who I usually talk to. He helps me to work out plots and because he's an actor. My brother's an actor and he's in stuff. He's a working actor. And so his whole job is character, is looking at, you know, the way a character is written and then interpreting it and bringing it to life. And so he's been super, super helpful with everything I write to, you know, explore things from his perspective as what I consider an expert on character. And as much as I am also in a different way, his perspective of bringing it to life and getting something and then working through the motivation and the reactions and things. So I had a conversation with him and then also this research, which I'm going to get to. And those things were kind of boiling in my head and they've taken a different direction. So I was outlining it. I had this direction that I was going in. I'd also talked to a couple of other people. I talked to my critique partner and mastermind partner, Inez Johnson. Shout out to Inez, who helped me clarify some things too. And then in the morning, I talked to my husband briefly. And he always has interesting perspectives too, because he is a consumer of a lot of different media and comes at it from a different perspective than all the other people that I talk to. And as always, super supportive, but is that other voice that, you know, is helpful to get people coming from completely different places. And I, you know, I was working through something with him. So it opened up other ideas that I have to follow now. And I probably will be scrapping a lot of what I thought I was going to write in this storyline. And like scrapping it, but not like, you know, the character it's book three. So the character of Ella, who is not in the original Song of Blood and Stone, but comes in the special edition. This new storyline in book three is kind of coalescing around her and her goals. So, you know, the things that she's done are canon. It's book one. And that's off to the printer. And so her motivations are the same, but the external stimuli and the motivations of the other characters are changing. And so to a certain extent, the storyline is the same, but a lot of things are changing. So I don't like not keeping to my schedule, but it's unavoidable. And inevitably, I don't keep to my schedule. I mean, like, and I try to schedule with that in mind, knowing that things are going to take longer. If I plan to write 6 days a week, I probably will only write 4 days a week. Some days three, sometimes I'm not feeling it. And the creative process is the creative process and it has to exist within these boundaries. But, I do try to, when I initially do my schedule, I know that I'm not going to keep to it. And as much as I hate it, I would love to be like perfectly on time and like a finely tuned Swiss clock, and it doesn't ever happen. So make my peace with it. I meet my deadlines. It's a point of pride and just a point of professionalism, I think, to whenever possible, meet my deadlines. So yes. Now, one of the other things that caused this change of path in the storyline is this research that I was doing. So in the series, there is a political assassination. I'm going to try to keep this all spoiler free, although this book doesn't come out for a year. But there's an assassination that's actually happened in previous to book three. And so I was now I'm dealing with the conspiracy behind it. And so I was doing research on the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, which was the catalyst for World War I. And that was always sort of one of the inspirations for this act, but not very loosely. And so that took me down through the Black Hand, which was the organization, like the guy who assassinated Franz Ferdinand was a member of Black Hand. And from there, I went to the Chinese Assassination Corps, which is a group of anarchists who wanted to, you know, not have the empire anymore in China. And that led me to Narodnaya Volya, which is the people's will in Russia. And all of these revolutionary groups who were just freedom fighters to a certain degree. Like I said, the Chinese Assassination Corps were anarchists. Which is also, I have a personal relationship with anarchism. Totally another tangent, but when I was probably 9 or 10, it was 1987, and we had to memorize the preamble to the Constitution because of some kind of bicentennial. 1787, whatever it was. And my fifth grade teacher, Miss Foster, made us memorize the preamble to the Constitution. And so fifth grade, Leslie was like going along. I guess that was probably the first time I learned a lot what was in the Constitution. And so, you know, I was lucky enough to have a Black social studies teacher in a school system that was not majority Black at all. And so it was very clear from her that, you know, in the Constitution, they had the compromise between the North and the South where slaves were 3/5 of people for the purposes of congressional elections and things like that. So once I learned that in this document, was considered 3/5 of a person. After that, for me, I mean, the whole Constitution, it was fruit from a poison tree. I was not able to understand why I had to follow any document that said I wasn't even a whole person. And the logical step for me was that all government is inherently evil. And just why should I follow these laws? Like, these laws were not made for me. I wasn't included in them. I'd have to follow them. And Ms. Foster was very frustrated by this little cynical voice in her classroom. And no one could ever explain to me why I was wrong. And to this day, I wasn't wrong. Now, I mean, I do see the societal and organizational benefits to following rules and laws in a society and in the country. But I still think that I was right. And it really wasn't until seeing the musical Hamilton that I got any kind of a different perspective on that and envisioning these people as human beings and not just like old racist white men creating laws and beating and abusing and torturing their slaves. Side note. So yes, I fell into this hole of research that was tugging me into these other directions of story because it's fascinating. All of these things that I was, you know, the research is, I love it and hate it. Like I write fantasy and it's second world. So I make up a lot of stuff, but I want it to be grounded. And anything from the technology to, you know, the reasons why some country or some group of people would want to murder, you know, a political leader. And I just saw the possibilities for deepening the story, really deepening these motivations and creating this sort of intricate, which I'm still doing, like creating an intricate rationale. And I already have things happening in different countries with different factions for different reasons, which I love, but there is the potential of going too far and making it too complicated. And what I'm writing is technically like a C storyline. It's not the main storyline. I've already have the main storyline done. And I'm just following up on some threads and deepening an aspect of the story, but I don't want it to run away. So I have to rein myself in. I have to really pull myself back because I could feel myself. I was writing notes and I was just imagining, like, what if I did this? What if I did that? And what if I did this? And that's where my mind goes. So I recognized that. I took a step back and I was like, Leslie, this is all not going to work. What can I do that people will actually understand and that will still satisfy my need for all of that, like, beautiful complexity and all of the shades of gray that I like having in there? You know, I'm not interested in mustache twirling villains in general. And so having, you know, but I recognize that too much layering is difficult to access. And so there's that balance that I have to strike. And hence, not following my schedule, both discovering, you know, these wonderful new things and then pulling myself back and reminding myself, okay, what is the story about? What are the themes? That's how I pull myself back. What does this character want? What are their desires? And making the obstacles so that, you know, so that it's an interesting read and there's enough conflict, but not just allowing myself to write a whole book about this conspiracy to murder this political leader. So yes, that is my personal writing update for this week. I think I'm back on track now. I'm going to give it some more thought, crossing my fingers that I will be writing. I'll be doing a fast draft next week by Monday. That is the new schedule. So that's what, 4 days after I wanted it to be. There is enough padding. With the padding, you know, on the back end, just means that it reduces the chance that I'll have the time I wanted for other feedback. And I'm going to try to just send people stuff as I write it, which is hard for me to do because I'm iterative and I'm layering all the time, and things I write, the first draft is short, the next draft is a little longer, and then it gets a little longer. And so if you're reading something, it's not going to be indicative of the final work if I try to give people a few chapters at a time. But I do need people to kind of check me and be like, okay, Leslie, as much as you were trying to rein yourself in, you didn't do a good job. So you need to, like, make this understandable to other humans. And that is very important. So that's it for this week. My goal by next week is to be well into my fast draft. It's like a zero draft of this new storyline. And I hope I have plenty of words. And I will have redone the schedule so that I know when the next time I will break the schedule will be. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will talk to you later. Happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com.